The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
No living organism can continue for long to exist sanely under conditions of total chaos. Even jackals and vultures are supposed by some to dream. The Gorbals, not sane, stood by itself against its hills, holding blackness within. It had stood for 80 years and might stand for 80 more. Within, walls tilted and buckled, bricks met randomly and rattled loosely. Floors were stained and warped, and doors were fearfully bolted and barricaded in their ill-fitted frames. Thumps and cries and screams beat steadily against the wood and stone of the Gorbals, yet whatever hunted there, hunted alone. The Gorbals are a housing estate in the city of Glasgow, Scotland. It was, and remains, the poorest and most dangerous such estate in all of Western Europe. It's a sprawling collection of buildings covered in grime and graffiti, some sprayed in places it would seem no human being could reach. Long stretches of its outside balconies and inside hallways were burned out entirely, set ablaze by roaming packs of bored and helpless youth, either in revenge for a perceived insult or for sport. Its murder rate dwarfed that of any other 5 city blocks in the entire United Kingdom. In short, it is where the poorest of the poor were dumped by the city to rot or kill each other off. It mattered little to the city fathers which. Places like the Gorbals seldom make the news, apart from the tabloids trying to titillate readers by describing in loving detail the brutish violence that the inhabitants dealt out to each other. The mother who cooked her 3-month-old baby because God told her to. The frail old grandfather, his head smashed into an unrecognizable blob of red jelly after the door to his flat was firebombed. All for the £2 note in his pocket and a jar of change on his mantle. The papers do not bother with the dollar stories. Decent and hard-working people struggling to love and protect their families in this hellish environment, sentenced here for the crime of being poor, daily wearing against the shit which that punishment carries. Bullied by governments and police when not neglected, forced to live side by side with perverts, criminals, and the insane, and all other cast-offs society has no use for. No one wants to read that. Boring. Now on to sports. All that changed in the late 1940s and early 1950s. Children began to regularly disappear at the Gorbals' housing estate. Often the parents, lost in a haze of booze or narcotics or simple despair, scarcely noticed. Those who did contact the police generally regretted doing so. For one thing, speaking to the police is a swift, easy way to wind up crippled, or worse, at the Gorbals. Secondly, if a child went missing, the police were pleased to hear it. One less doomed and damned soul they'd surely have to confront eventually. Runaways were the typical response. True enough, many children run off from impossible home life to the bright lights of the metropolis. In Chicago, they step confused and get lost from the bus into the car of John Wayne Gacy with his promises of a hot meal and warm bed. Or in London, they might find themselves left to the tender mercies of beloved television icon and serial child predator Jimmy Savile. It's like the world blinks its eyes and they're gone. Usually forever. This was especially true at the Gorbals housing estate in the early 1950s. It's hard to put an exact number on how many children vanished in the space of 5 or so years. It's very difficult to compile statistics on the desperately poor. No one wants to count them, nor do they wish to be counted. The disappearances were erratic. Sometimes one might vanish in a month, and later four would go missing in the span of a week. Their ages ranged from anywhere from 5 to 15. Occasionally a body would be found, the throat torn out, pale with blood loss in burnt-out vacant flats or in the vast cemetery which is the Gorbals' closest neighbor. A massive necropolis of graves, tombs, and crypts, which stretch all the way to the horizon and seems forever blanketed by a thick, low-lying fog. The head of the one child was found decorating a cross on top of one stone. Sometimes just an arm or leg would be found draped over a fence or a gravestone. To the children of the Gorbals, it was no mystery who would carry them off and slaughter them. Their description was disturbingly consistent. It was a man, a massive man, 7 feet in height or more, and wider than a doorway. His eyes glowed a dull and swampy green, and while he smiled at the kill, long rows of sharp, glinted steel teeth revealed themselves before the monster latched itself onto the child. The Gorbals' vampire was born. Parents ignored the children. The newspapers scoffed, and the police would occasionally arrest an innocent and try to beat a confession from them, but the disappearances continued. The children gathered themselves in packs for protection, armed with metal bars, bottles, bricks, cricket bats, anything they could lay their hands on. These dead-eyed children, who have seen more brutality and horror in their brief lives than most of us ever will, fear very little. But they feared the hulking beast, which stalked their dark, stinking hallways, seeking fresh prey. God help any unfamiliar face stupid enough to venture into them during these years. Packs of children would be upon them in an instant, weapons savagely smashing down upon the careless stranger. Some were crippled, many nearly died, but the disappearances went on, until one night in 1954, it all exploded. Howling like barbarians at the gates of Rome for 3 straight days, mobs of children invaded the necropolis. Gravestones were smashed into powder, tombs and crypts were raided and toppled while, in a frenzy, the children hunted the monster which had tormented them and filled their dreams for 5 long years. Parents who tried to bring their young ones home were swiftly driven back, staggering and bleeding. A large contingent of police arrived to drive the kids back into their hovels. Instead, it was the police who were running. Out of the necropolis and out of the Gorbals, showered with stones and bricks. After 3 days, the entire incident seemed to just stop, as the exhausted army of tiny warriors trooped back to their tenements, their killer still unaccounted for and loose. One troubling detail. Noticeably fewer children left the cemetery than had attacked it in the beginning. Anyone who took the trouble to ask why this was got the same reply. Vampire caught him, accompanied by a look that suggested the questionnaire was mentally deficient. After this, the Gorbals sank back into obscurity. Until 3 weeks ago. My name is Henry Sloan. My wife, Maya, and myself write popular histories of dreadful episodes in history, as well as famous historical monsters. Our book about Jonestown was turned into the worst made-for-television movie you have ever seen in your life. Our biography of Gilles de Rais, the right-hand man of Joan of Arc, Satanist and mass murderer of children who became the model for Bluebeard, netted us a small fortune. The follow-up on Vlad Tepes, or The Impaler, did even better than that. One question that never failed to piss us off was why such stuff interested us. We neither knew nor cared. Our passion, well, one of them, was flying to remote locations and finding the grisliest stories we could to horrify and entertain our ever-growing audience. While we were serious about our work, we agreed it was fun above all. On the surface, you would think we had nothing in common. I was born into a rich family just outside Boston, while Maya grew up on a tar paper shack in eastern Tennessee. I was given all I ever needed or asked for, and Maya was given a drunk stepfather and a mother who was just some furniture who had lost the will to run. While we didn't...
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Speak of it often. Maya would tell me of the senseless beatings and whippings she suffered at the hand of this walking tower of dog shit. His big mistake was deciding that my wife could have other uses beyond just that of a punching bag. Practically on the night of her 12th birthday, he entered her bedroom for the first and last time. While Maya fled the house that night, she left him one eye short of the two he'd had when he first made his way into her room. She also left the bottle of Jack Daniels he'd brought with him for refreshments in a very special place. I'm not saying where, only that she punched me in the chest to get me to stop laughing after she told me the tale. I got into Brown because my father went to Brown. Maya got there through brains, unbelievably hard work, and fighting and scrapping for every last thing she ever got. She wore rally t-shirts and torn jeans and a do-I-look-like-I-give-a-shit ponytail, and was the most beautiful and fascinating woman I'd ever met. She was a much better rider than me, much smarter and much stronger emotionally and physically, if our arm wrestling matches are anything to go by. I was a master of walking us directly into perilous and life-threatening situations, and Maya was a master of dragging my sorry self back out of them. I don't think she ever had any doubts about how much I loved her, but she didn't have a mushy bone in her body. As for why she loved me, well, she told me it was for my chocolate chip waffles, and I didn't think about it beyond that. A superstitious part of me was certain that if I understood it, I would lose it, and that would be the end of my world. Now that she's gone, I know much too well how right I was. And being right had always been Maya's job. Back to the story before I fall apart for the millionth time. We were in our brand spanking new Bel Air home one weekend, looking forward to a lazy afternoon of sunbathing and groping each other in our brand new swimming pool. Maya was setting some eggs on fire in the kitchen and hollering out a drive-by trucker's tune in her completely tone-deaf voice, which, yeah, you guessed it, sounded like a heavenly choir to me. Somewhere beyond that great white light is where my heart has gone, she sang. Somewhere she wondered what's taking me so long. There I go again. So the phone rang, the call that marked the beginning of the end of my life. I looked up and saw the caller ID and smiled. I lifted the phone.
What's happening, Kev?
It was our agent, Kevin Tenzin. We loved him like family, but damn, I hated it when people act all cute and mysterious, which is just what Kev did.
They're back,
he said, in a half-decent impression of the creepy poltergeist kid.
Who's back? Wind Chimes?
I asked, rolling my eyes. Wind Chimes was a long-dead beast of a mutt who Kevin insisted loved me. He'd prove his affection every time I came over by trying to bite my balls off. And if Wind Chimes isn't the single stupidest name a man ever gave a beast, then I just don't know.
Okay, sit tight, buddy, I said. I'll go find my shotgun.
Kevin laughed.
No, even better. How does the garble vampire sound?
I pulled up a stool and dropped myself down with a thud.
In our books, Maya and I add what we call sidebars. That's a page about something related to what we're writing about, while not the specific subject itself. Our book about Vlad the Impaler had included one on the Gorbel's vampire. I remember Maya lying on her bed, her bare legs kicking excitedly behind her and sucking on her pen as she read about the case. She was enraptured by it. Clearly, she didn't need to say so with boring old words. That sounds cool as hell, to be honest. What do you mean he's back? I asked.
Eloquent as always, Henry. I mean, kids are going missing from the Gorables again. A lot of kids. And the man taking them is 7 foot tall, give or take. Wide as a brick shithouse. Has glowing green eyes and a mouth stuffed with long, sharp teeth, which would appear to be made of steel. Any chance you and Maya would like an all-expense-paid trip to Scotland to see if there's a book in it for you?
Hold up, Mr. Tense, I replied with pompous formality. I need to run it by my boss.
Hey, babe,
I called out to Maya in the kitchen. She replied with her mouth full, obviously.
It's Kevin. He says the Gorbel's vampire is making an encore appearance, and do we want to fly over to Scotland on his dime and write a book about it?
The love of my life shouted enthusiastically, and I heard the thump, thump, thump of her bare feet hopping up and down on the kitchen floor. Kev, I said. Maya says yes. 2 days later, me and Maya were in Scotland and taking advantage of Mr. Tenzin's very deep pockets and seeing all the historic sights of Glasgow and dining at the most exclusive restaurants. I gripped Maya's hand as she attacked her filet mignon with the delicacy of a wolf cub's. Only the very best for you, Maya, I said, gazing at her fondly. Her eyes shot up from her plate and gave me a little half-smile.
Oh, baby,
she responded with her mouth half-full.
I just love how generous you are to me with other people's money.
I spread my arms wide in a gesture which said, You married a prince, and you got a prince, before we ordered our second bottle of champagne. We had agreed without a word being spoken we were not going to even mention the serial killer haunting the hills of the Gorbels. We had refused the whole business before pleasure axiom. It always seemed to work for us. But all things move toward their end. Of that you could be sure. I myself saw the truth of that when I managed to unstick the glue, which was apparently holding my eyes shut the next morning. Maya was already awake when I finally forced them open the next morning. Her thick black hair was freshly washed. She wore a spotless white blouse and a black skirt so prim that it nearly reached her knees. She was tucking her foot into a spiked heel, which must have made me gulp, because she glanced up at me and smiled. Morning, Bedhog. She chirped at me warmly. Now, I can count the times I've seen Maya dressed like this on two hands and have fingers to spare. We were both born in jeans and t-shirts and wouldn't have it any other way. I remain the only best-selling author I know who can't tie a tie. What's the occasion, baby? I asked as she wriggled sexily, as though trying to make the unfamiliar clothing feel more natural against her bare skin. Oh, wait. I plowed on like the lovesick dog I was. I think I know this game. I pulled a guilty face and whimpered. I'm sorry, Miss Teacher, but my daddy ate my homework. Maya snorted and wagged her finger at me.
Not bad, you sexy little brat, but you'll just have to wait till after school for me to deal with you.
As I moaned and dropped my head back on the pillow, she let me know she was going to visit the offices of every newspaper active during the original Gorbel's disappearances and see if she could uncover any details which had been left out of the papers. Okay, I said, while Maya stared in the mirror putting on her lipstick. I'll talk to the locals, find any creaky old geezers who remember the original disappearances. It's not like they could be any less cooperative than the police, right? Maya whirled on her toes to face me, which certainly gave me a little lift. She put her hands on her hips and said,
Fine, detective, but would you please do me a favor and try not to get yourself killed? It would be a dream come true for me to stay with you 24/7 to save yourself from yourself, But honey, I have to put food on the table. So you be smart. She jabbed a perfectly manicured red fingernail in my direction before adding, or pretend to be smart, I guess. We'll meet in front of the Gorbals at 4 p.m., and I swear to God, if you go barging in there without me, I'll hurt you so bad even you won't like it.
What kind of irresponsible pervert do you take me for?
I growled, trying to sound as indignant as possible. She winked, smiled, blew me a long, noisy kiss, and said, "Love you." And she was gone. I loved to watch her leave, as Merle Haggard or someone like that once said. My day was not a success. I spent most of my day ambling up and down the sad and shabby streets surrounding the Gorbals, seeking a friendly face that seemed up for a chat with a perfect stranger. They were more scarce than I'd hoped. Ultimately, I ended up tipsy in my fourth or fifth pub of the day. It was just me, the bartender, and an old man whose scowl was so profound he would have...
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Won a scowling trophy, if such a thing existed. He aimed his single expression at me and kept it there. The bartender was friendly enough, though. A burly, red-cheeked man with sideburns so woolly I wondered if he'd stolen them from a sheep and glued them to his face.
"Tourist?"
he asked, pulling me my fourth or eighth beer.
"Can't say we see many of you lot in this neighborhood. Y'all want to watch yourself in this part of Glasgow, friend."
He offered me with friendly concern. "No, I'm not a journalist," I replied. "I'm a writer. I'm actually looking into the latest string of child disappearances at the Gorbals. The police deny there are any. In fact, I don't think there's anything they don't deny. Anyway, I want to find out, is it maybe a copycat of the serial killer that made big news here back in the 50s? The frowner snorted so loudly I looked over in alarm, afraid to see two high-powered jets of snot rocketing in my direction.
"Serial killer, the Yankee says. Ain't that cute, Tom?"
he asked the bartender, who dried glasses and retired behind his sideburns. The astounding scowl turned back to me.
"It's the exact same thing it were back there, have no doubt. And you can drop the whole cute serial killer business too, laddie. It's not a man, it's a thing. And you'll do well to remember that. We called it a vampire, and that's exactly what it is. No more, no less."
"Well, except for two things, that's a strong theory," I said. "Problem is, there's no such thing as vampires. Second problem, if it's the same man, then by now he'd be about 95 years old, which is a rough age for someone to be out stalking prey." I trailed off as I looked into the face of my sourpuss companion. A quick word about the Glasgow accent. It is rich and full of character. It also sounds like someone's trying to spit and speak German at the same time with a mouthful of marbles. But I understood every word my companion said next as clear as a bell. His scowl was gone, and he stared straight ahead with bulging, wet eyes and his chin trembling.
"It took me, Alice, it did. Daddy, please come, help. I hear it clearly now as I did 60 years ago. I ran to my daughter's room and I saw that thing, with my daughter beneath its arm and climbing out the window. Then that devil looked back at me. It smiled and split its face, like the horror I felt were the sweetest thing on earth. I ran for her, my Alice, but they were just gone. No man can move as quick as that. I could see hundreds of meters in every direction, but..."
He shook his head, chin pressed to his chest, as tears flooded down the deepest creases of his face. Then he looked back at me, his eyes haunted and awful.
There was nothing left of my baby Alice but a scream. A scream in the night. Then, nothing.
The old man gripped my arm tightly.
Tell me, mister, what do you say of a man who can't protect his own child? And tell me this, eh? What does a man do when his world comes to an end? What does he do?
I have asked myself that same question every day since.
I'm sorry,
I said with absolute sincerity, my voice no more than a whisper. The old man must have heard it too, because he gave my arm a gentle squeeze.
What do I owe you, Tom?
He asked the bartender.
Nothing, Mick. Not tonight. You go on home now. You take care of yourself, Mick.
Mick slowly got to his feet and shuffled towards the door.
Oh, I'll do that, Tom. I can take care of myself just fine. That's what kills me.
And he was gone. A few minutes later, I stood at the street leading into the Gorbals. I heard a brisk clicking and then saw Maya come around the corner, just a bit awkwardly on her high heels. She grinned like a 10-year-old when she saw me and waved eagerly.
Oh my God, baby, you have no idea how rude...
Her words froze when she saw my face. Her hands shot up, and her beautiful green eyes searched my face with love and concern.
Henry, what's wrong? What happened?
Cupping my cheeks in her cool palms, I opened my mouth to speak, but nothing came. I looked deeply into my wife's eyes and told her,
I'll tell you soon, Maya. I promise. Just not right now, okay?
Sure, baby. Sure,
she said, nodding as I pulled her as closely to me as I could without breaking her. I told her I loved her and felt her lips smile on my ear.
I know you do, you goofball.
Her warm breath and smell of her body pressed to mine slowly brought my heartbeat back to normal.
Love you more, she said, giving my earlobe a sharp little nibble.
It was the last time I ever held my wife. Our moment was interrupted by the sound of muttering. An old woman behind us in four skirts and God knows how many sweaters was shredding a pile of napkins and scalding them as she did. Her hair was twisted and filthy, her face caked with dirt. I estimated her age as between 40 and 80.
I think I'm going to have a quick chat with this nice lady, okay, hon? You stay put, all right?
Maya said, squeezing my arm. I nodded and tried to force a smile. As she walked off, I got my first good look at the Gorbals. Though it was nearly 5 p.m., the place looked deserted. Garbage blew through deserted courtyards. Every single wall was covered in screaming lunatic graffiti. I glanced at what I imagined was once a playground on a low mound of dirt. Not one piece of equipment was intact. The swing set had no swings, just dangling chains. The seesaw was in pieces. It was as if an enemy army bent on revenge had torn through the estate, smashing and burning everything in its path. Though it seemed deserted, the whole atmosphere pulsed with menace. While I saw no people, I didn't think for a second that many pairs of unfriendly eyes weren't watching me from within. I wandered to the building right in front of me, which seemed entirely burnt out. A door dangled from a hinge. I peered in and saw nothing. For a reason I'll never understand, I went for a closer look. The hallway I entered reeked of piss and rot and charred wood. The raging graffiti followed me down the hall. The doorless flats stared at me with black emptiness. I had gone far enough. I turned to go back to Maya and stopped short. Without making a sound, four teenage boys with wide smiles and empty eyes blocked my path.
"Well, well, well," said what appeared to be their leader. "A visitor.
We don't get many of those, do we, lads?
His three companions chuckled like he'd made a funny. The largest of the four had buck teeth and giggled like a loon. More worryingly, he carried a bicycle chain he softly tapped off his thigh.
So, what'll it be then, friend?
Their apparent leader asked me, icy blue eyes locked on me. Smack, smoke, crank? Or is there something else you're trying to find? Kids, maybe. Really young ones. Is that it? I looked around and saw the four had placed me in the center of a big, happy, smiling square.
I'll bet that's it, isn't it?
The voice had gone low and dangerous, but the smile never faltered. They wore a uniform of sorts. Green bomber jackets, close cropped hair, and gleaming Doc Martin boots. The steady giggling of the moron with the chain was really getting under my skin.
That's it. I exclaimed so loudly they nearly took a step back. I want kids, lots of kids. Nice to talk with a sharp young man like yourself. There aren't enough disgusting rat hole slums in the United States, so I figured I'd do the sensible thing and fly all the way to Glasgow, the real asshole of the universe, to look for kids here. Sadly, you four are too old and, frankly, too ugly for my taste. So, if you'll kindly step aside.
I tried to bull past them. The idiotic laughter spiraling ever higher and louder when something hit me. I don't know who or what, but I felt my...
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
My mouth exploded in pain and staggered back. A club of some sort clanged into the back of my knee, and down I went.
Assholes,
I snarled as my body hit the floor. Out of nowhere, I was filled with fury that decent people who suffered enough as it was had to live cowering in terror from sadistic little bastards like this. It wasn't fair. But righteous rage will only get you so far against four healthy, strong, and vicious teenage thugs. And soon, the kicking commenced. To anyone that's curious, yes, Doc Martin boots are steel-capped, and my ribs will testify to that. But the sharpest and most burning agony came from the young fellow I'll call Giggles, who began to relentlessly flog my body with his chain.
Dear God, I was going to die here.
Hey!
The familiar voice of a woman exploded down the hall like a gunshot.
Get away from him right now, you scumbags. I'm not playing with you.
The words weren't sweet, nor was their angry tone. But their sweet, slight southern drawl was Maya.
Maya, please, run. Get a cop or something.
The thought these four might harm her nearly drove me mad. I felt blood pour in a river over my lips and down my neck.
Oh, I don't think so,
the leader said, stomping a heel onto my furiously protesting ribs for good measure.
You're just who we were waiting for, bitch,
he said, and swaggered easily over to Maya without a care in the world. That is, until he squealed like a 9-year-old girl and his hands shot over his face.
I'm blind! I'm blind!
He howled, while even in my blood and pain, I barked out a loud, ha, from the floor. Maya had done to him what I'd seen Mo do to Curly a million times on the Three Stooges. With her lovely little fingers and long, sharp red nails, she poked him directly in the eyes. The only thing missing was the boink sound effect. Well, Giggles the moron wasn't going to tolerate this, so he charged at Maya and savagely attacked her knee with his balls. Shame for him, her knee was tougher, and soon he doubled over with bulging eyes, gasping for breath and grasping whatever he had down there. At last, his loony laugh had stopped, and Maya, standing over me, shouting,
"Why couldn't you stay put like I said?"
If these idiots hadn't gotten to you first, I'd be kicking you myself.
Which was much easier on my ears. Suddenly, the chaos and madness were broken by the sound of a slow clapping. A slow, sarcastic clapping.
What a performance.
A thick and very Slavic accent emerged from an enormous black shadow which materialized at the end of the hall.
Really? All six of you should take a bow.
The shadow's head nearly brushed the ceiling, and it was practically as wide as the hallway. The gang leader had taken his hands from his eyes. He wasn't blind, but he clearly looked very stoned.
The fuck are you?
He snarled. In a voice thick with good humor, the shadow replied.
To be perfectly honest, my young friend, I am taking part in an international student competition to see who can sell the most magazines.
The youth snarled something unintelligible. He was having a rough day, and yanked a very nasty-looking carving knife from his pocket. With what I guess was his idea of a war cry, this brave and profoundly stupid young man charged at the hulking form. I'd like to tell you what happened in detail, but can't. It happened in less than a blink of an eye. Moving nothing but its arm, the shadow yanked the kid from the floor and smashed him face first into the stone wall of the hallway. There was a gruesome sound of multiple bones snapping, and a squishing sound beneath that. When casually tossed onto the floor, the entire front of his body was flat. I can't elaborate on that. Flat like he'd been run over by a steamroller. Flat as a pancake. I wasn't sure if it was revolting or funny. Maya made her own voice clear with an,
"Ew, gross."
"I won't miss him," I told her, still looking up from the floor.
"Me neither," she said, "but it's still gross."
A second kid tried to back away, but the arms of the shadow snapped out, grabbing his head and twisted. More snapping noises. The giant kept twisting, and then with a gentle tug, ripped the kid's head right off. As he dropped to his knees, with blood jetting from his neck, the remaining two thugs decided they'd seen far more than enough. Giggles and his friend, who I hadn't had the pleasure of meeting yet, unless his boots count, tore off down the hall. The giant held the head as though it were preparing to go bowling, but instead, it whipped it so hard at the retreating two that it was barely a blur.
"Damn,"
the shadow murmured when the head exploded like a pumpkin at the end of the hall, missing Giggles by less than a foot, leaving us with another schoolgirl shriek. The gang abandoned the hallway to us and the stranger. It took a step forward, and we both flinched. We were in a hallway with two utterly mangled bodies, after all. We wrote about that. It didn't mean we wanted to be a part of it.
"You are the Sloans?"
it asked. I slowly nodded while Maya said,
"Yeah, do we know you?"
"Yes, I believe so. You certainly know of me."
It drew closer still, without apparently moving. Now I saw a faint green throbbing where its eyes should be, and a glinting where its teeth should be.
"Come,"
it said, and gestured.
"My time is short, and we must speak."
It turned and began walking, or rather, gliding toward the back exit.
"Get up, you goober,"
Maya whispered, and dug the toe of her shoe in my side, which had already suffered quite enough for one day, thank you very much. I yelped.
"What'd you do that for?"
"'Cause you deserve it," Maya answered pleasantly. "And then some. But right now, we're working." "Oh, goody. Something to look forward to," I groaned, as bolts of agony shot through my whole body. Maya, bless her heart, at least took hold of my arm to help me stand fully upright. When we stepped out into the open air, we both gasped. If you can imagine an ocean of graves, that's just where we were.
the massive form of what I couldn't stop myself from thinking of as the Gorbel's vampire swayed side to side, as many giant men do when they walk, as he led us deeper into the wild jumble of graves and crypts and tombs. We took turns catching each other as we slipped on the soaking grass.
"Would you hold up, please?"
Maya called ahead to our guide.
"I'm wearing heels, you know."
Lifting a leg to pull one off.
"I would not do that if I were you,"
the giant warned.
"Used syringes and even less pleasant things are here to be stepped on."
"Well, shit," Maya grumbled.
"Hey, I'll carry you,"
I offered. Maya's eyes rolled.
"Oh, shut up,"
she moaned, and I obeyed, but with a hurt look on my face. She noticed and relented.
"You're all beat up, and actually kind of gross right now. How about back at the hotel?"
She kissed my cheek.
"My hero can carry me over the threshold."
I was back to happily smiling my idiot smile as our guide growled deeply, shook his head, and rubbed his temples, standing at the pitch-black entrance of a crypt.
"If you please,"
he said with clenched teeth.
"Tonight would be most convenient."
Then he turned and vanished within. When me and Maya stepped in, he was gone, but we found ourselves in a long tunnel lined with torches. On we walked, agreeing that was maybe the dumbest thing we'd ever done.
"Where the hell did—"
Maya almost said, when the hall opened into a wide chamber. And there, on a roughly carved stone chair, or maybe throne, sat the Gorbel's vampire. I skipped the small talk.
"Look, I don't know where to start. Who are you? And spare us the vampire bullshit. We aren't 10. Why?"
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
"Are you here? What do you want with us? And what happened here in the 1950s? Was there ever really a so-called Gorbel's vampire, or was it mass hysteria? And if there was, who was he?"
I paused. Mick from the pub rushed back into my mind. "I know for a fact there was some nastiness that took place here. Some rather extreme nastiness." The giant cocked its head to the side, looking at me curiously. I tried to hold eye contact and nearly gasped. The eyes were blacker than any I'd ever seen. They seemed to swirl with dark knowledge and infinite experience. They seemed so ancient as to be beyond any human conception of time. From what seemed like miles away, I heard Maya ask if I was all right.
"No,"
I whispered. I felt her arms slide around my waist and could have wept with gratitude. With that gesture, she grounded me back in humanity and everything that was best about being a part of it. I would much rather die than exchange my mayfly existence for that of this ancient monster sitting before us. When my eyes brushed over his again, another wave of vertigo hit me. First it was age, now it was loneliness. I could feel, just for an instant, the loneliness a monster like this must live, century after century, always alone.
"Don't you pity me, human?"
A voice snarled menacingly in my head.
"Don't you dare pity me."
The voice was almost trembling with fury now. Yet, when my vertiginous out-of-body experience was over, the monster was gazing at us, blandly and placidly.
"I will answer what I can,"
it said.
"As for childhood vampire stories, Miss Sloan, do you have a mirror?"
Maya nodded and fumbled for her compact.
see for yourself.
It said. Even though I largely expected it, the chair where the monster sat was empty in the mirror. It waved its hands dismissively.
Take my picture if you must with your phones. The result will be the same.
Maya pawed around in her purse for a moment and removed a crucifix and held it up. The monster cocked an eyebrow.
Tell me, dear, since I have existed for 1,000 years before your church was even imagined, why would anything about it or its symbol trouble me? If you have brought a gallon of holy water, I will drink it. It is of no account.
It waved its giant paw in dismissal again.
Yeah, it doesn't mean much to us either, Maya replied, which drew a chuckle from the thing.
I will tell you what is true. To enter the home of a human, we must be invited. Sunlight does not kill us, but it does not please us either. The dark is our natural element. To kill us, only a stake through the heart and decapitation will work, or we rejuvenate. As for this,
it said, and pointed to its long railroad-spiked teeth.
They are my own invention. Each fang has a tiny hole, so I can drain a child with a single suck rather than using just my canines.
Huh, smart, I mumbled. The thing looked at me with an unimaginable weariness and continued.
As for my age, I lived in Babylon when it was at the height of its power. I was already old when Rome was a tiny village. I drank the blood of the healthy and the young for the same reason you humans do not drink poison. Their blood is unpolluted, quite simply. Most importantly, Estragoi cannot transform a human into one of us, any more than you can transform a donkey into a human. We are not the same species. Now our time is at an end, so I must tell you why I sought you out when I sensed you were in Glasgow. Nothing is eternal. You humans have been efficient, dare I say, genocidal, in your war upon Estragoi. Nearly all of us were slaughtered in the 1500s, and the remainder one by one in the days since. I am weary, ancient. I no longer wish to tumble ever downward through the abyss of time. I cannot die, but I can hibernate. Go into what you might call suspended animation. I am even.
And here it looked at me, and I saw a brief flicker of red in its eyes.
Lonely.
I bet, I heard Maya murmur.
If you see me a year from this day, I will be no different than stone.
Slowly, it dropped its head and spoke almost to itself.
I am the last of my kind.
We stood in heavy silence until the monster raised its enormous head and looked back and forth at us, and asked with an almost childlike yearning.
When you leave here, will you write of our meeting? Tell the world that I was real, that I was here.
I gaped at the thing, and then at Maya, when she softly replied,
Yes.
I looked at the Gorbel's vampire and added,
The boss says yes, so yes.
Thank you,
it said.
Please, leave me now. I must prepare for the end. Go.
It waved its hand, dismissing us. We turned and began walking, dazed by all that occurred.
Did that really happen? Are we dreaming? And how the hell are we going to explain this to Tenzin?
It dawned on me I felt an emptiness at my side. I whipped my head to the side and found I was alone.
Maya?
I shouted, and then screamed. What had been a straight line to the vampire's lair was suddenly a maze lit intermittently by torches. While I felt my sanity begin to slip and begin to run wildly in all directions, screaming my wife's name. I could swear I heard cruel, mocking laughter bounce off the walls. The laughter reached a crescendo as I staggered into a chamber as massive as a cathedral and found the missing children of the Gorbals. Frozen, I stared at the mountain of bones, skulls, ribcages, femurs. Some corpses were still decomposing, and the putrid chamber was alive with leaping rats, seething maggots, cockroaches the size of my hand, and centipedes as long as my arm, all combing together in a frantic dance in celebration of the conqueror worm. Now a woman's voice had joined the male voice which forever mocked me as I ran like a rat in a maze. But this woman's voice was cold. So goddamn cold. I could have run like that for hours or days. I don't know. Eventually, I fell face first onto the ground of the necropolis and sprinted my way toward the Gorbals. It was night. Usually, the streets were filled with all manner of drunks, wild youth, whores. But tonight was different. I saw lurking figures in doorways, with eyes flickering red. It was then I saw a giant with a woman with long raven black hair striding away from me into the night. "Maya!" I screamed, nearly shredding my throat. The woman turned and gave me a wolfish smile and a laugh like shattering icicles. It looked like Maya, but to the depths of my heart, I knew it wasn't. The monster had lied. It could change people, and had been doing so rapidly. As I fled the Gorbals, I saw mobs of those still human running as hunched black shapes leapt upon them from alleys and rooftops like giant black spiders, dragging them down, sucking them dry, and making more. The speed with which the attack and collapse came was shocking. For some reason, though, they left me entirely alone. Anne Rice was in for a very nasty surprise. The sensitive and poetic souls in her novels had turned out to have the soul and depth of feeling a rat pack. And yet these hissing, vicious rodents would seem to sniff the air around me and dash off for a different kill. The flight back to L.A. was chaos, like a flight of refugees from a war zone. No safety was to be found here, either. Every night, more and more of this army of the damned would be out in force. Radio announcers would make hourly reports about where warm bloods might be found. I spent day and night in a state of numb shock, indifference to the dying world around me. Some stood and fought, but while brave, it was also useless. The bloodsuckers were relentless. They could smell a human from miles away. About 10 years ago, me and Maya had gone to the Middle East to study the demons of ancient Samaria and Mesopotamia. Ever see The Exorcist? Yeah, that one. Unfortunately, a well-known terrorist group was still in the same general whereabout. We discussed it and agreed we'd sooner die on our own terms than be tortured to death by these holy psychopaths. Using our connections and Maya's irresistible charm, we managed to obtain 2 cyanide capsules. Obviously, it never came to that, but as human civilization slid beneath the fang, I clung to my capsule like a sacred relic. One day, long after the phones and then the lights went down, I discovered an envelope slid under my door. Unmarked. Whole body shaking from too much booze, the horrors I'd seen, and above all, a broken heart. I tore it open and read, written in an elegant script I'm sure was blood.
"My friend, I must confess, I was not entirely candid with you. As I expect you have noticed, we can turn you warm bloods with the greatest ease. And not too bright of you to trust the words of a Nosferatu, yes. As the last of you warm bloods are hunted down and moved to pens and warehouses to feed your new masters, you must wonder why you remain untouched. We Strigoi are not without sentiment, and my queen has requested I leave you at liberty until she finds just the right occasion to introduce you into our legion. Perhaps you know of whom I speak. When we last met, you knew her as Maya, though to retain a human name is an insult to the royalty of the Strigoi. More importantly, I wish you to remain as you are to write the story of the death of the old world and birth of the glorious new. Yes, my friend, you shall be my scribe and most valuable pet in my royal menagerie. My queen and I look forward to our reunion with you eagerly. How amusing to watch you dance and sing at our banquets until that day you become the banquet itself. Regards, your lord and emperor, Vampiri the First.
I rolled my cyanide capsule between my fingers. I have written all I shall about this pompous and evil reptile. I will never look in the empty eyes of the woman I loved with everything I was. I look at my wife, Maya, and see a monster. To my fellow humans, resistance truly is useless, but you can follow my example. Eliminate their food supply by eliminating yourselves. Better to die than live beneath the fang.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.